Welcome to the Way of the Yogi discussion and our very first podcast. It is Sunday, February 13th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
And I'm Deborah Barclay.
And together we produce this podcast as an act of service to the yoga community. Tonight with us we have our friend Suzanne. Way of the Yogi is a work in progress, as we are each a work in progress. We believe the journey toward making the world healthy and whole begins with the single steps we each take as individuals to make ourselves whole. And as a group of individuals with a common purpose, we have all decided to make the journey together. It is our sincere hope that everyone listening to or taking part in our discussions will find the inspiration to begin that process of self-integration and the realization that we never were, are, or will be alone on the journey to unification with our higher selves. I'm going to turn things over to Deborah for a moment, who has our community announcements. Deborah.
I wanted to take a moment before we begin to thank Equity Management and the Centennial Tower for allowing us to use this space for our meetings. The Fireside Lounge is where we're at, and it's a great spot. It's a great community to gather in, so thank you, Equity. I also wanted to mention that we now have a website. It's under construction right now, but should be up and running full throttle in about a week or so. We can be found at www.wayoftheyogi.com. Our goal is to use wayoftheyogi.com as a gathering point for the yoga community. We plan to create a virtual space where interested yogis can go to find out about local classes, retreats, and topics of interest. We invite you to check us out at wayoftheyogi.com and be on the lookout for updates and postings to come. For this week, I have a few announcements I'd like to mention, some of the events that may be of interest to Seattleites. These are things happening around town. So, Suzanne. Tomorrow, there's a Valentine's Day meditation workshop up in Wedgwood. It's at a place called World of Meditation, and it's from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. It's an $8 fee, and it's heart meditations from different meditation traditions. And they suggest you wear comfortable clothes and be ready to meditate. The next one is on February 27th, and that's at Red Square Yoga in Queen Anne. It's a workshop called The Yoga of Forgiveness. And it's join Stacy Lawson and Emily Barton for a workshop on forgiveness. Study its many forms and decide how to apply the practice in your life. In this workshop, they will begin with asana.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. And breathing practice, and then go into a discussion.
That sounds very like my kind of workshop.
Yeah.
That's right. I said last week we need to do a down dog or something.
Right. The last one is more for sports angle, and that one's on February 26th. That's from 1:30 to 4:30, and it's yoga for skiers workshop. And that's at Snow Creek Yoga Studio, which is in... That's in Leavenworth, so it's a bit of a drive.
I was just in Leavenworth.
Were you?
Skiing.
Okay. So yeah, that might be something to check out next time you're in Leavenworth. It's at the Snow Creek Yoga Studio.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Just look that one up.
Yeah.
I can, yeah, sure. And then we also have the SGI USA Seattle Metro Region 2011 Women's Meeting. It's Live the Vow. And this is a Buddhist women's meeting. They invite us to join their February commemorative women's meeting and share their victories in faith, or our victories in faith, at the Seattle Culture Center. It's at 3438 South 148th Street in Seattle. You can reach them at 206-244-0268 for more information. That'll be held on Sunday, February 27th from 1 to 3 p.m. And you can look them up on their website at sgi.usa.org.
Great.
All right. So I just want to have everyone take a moment now to sit back, gather your thoughts, find a comfortable seated position. Just close your eyes and turn within. Allow your mind to clear. And allow all the thoughts of the day that's gone on so far to fall into the background. Allow any plans left for this evening, tomorrow, next week, to also fade into silence. And bring the mind fully into the room, fully into the present moment. Be here, now. Focus on your breathing. And allow your mind to open and your heart as well. Bring yourself into the full realization that no matter where we are in life, everything is fine in this moment. In this moment, everything is as it is. And we have nowhere else to be but right here, right now. Open your eyes. And we'll begin tonight by just recapping a little bit about what happened in our last meeting. So last meeting we talked about quite a bit about security. The issue and the concept of security came up quite a bit. And it seems in today's world, in these changing, chaotic times, that this is really a topic that a lot of people have quite a vested interest in, in finding that source of security.
Right. Well, and I also think that people have had what they believed security to be changes, you know,
right.
So frequently.
Right. And we determined that relying on outside sources of security is always a setup for disappointment.
Tricky at best.
Very tricky at best. Because the outside world is always changing.
Right.
Everything around us is always changing. The only thing that we truly have that we can rely on, say it.
Is us.
That's
is ourselves.
Right. Ourselves. That's right. Is what is that part of ourselves that is unaffected by change. That deep center. And we talked about how to connect with that center and what it meant to us, what that center actually means. And the word equanimity came up. And that's a very, very important word in yoga, I think, one that we'll be hearing over and over again. So today we're going to begin the process of learning what it is we're trying to ultimately accomplish here. What the goal of yoga is. Our main focus, our main topic, is the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali and using those philosophies, those sutras, in our everyday modern lives in order to gain that sense of equanimity, that sense of security. There we go. So Sutra 1, the very first sutra in the Pada, in the Samadipada, is Atta Yogana Shasanam. Atta means now. It also means it's a prayer, a benediction. Yoga is application or contemplation or integration as well. And Anushasanam is a procedural guide or an instruction. So basically, what they're saying, what my version that I am reading, the translation that I'm reading, is from Iyengar, BKS Iyengar, and what he translates that as is, with prayers for divine blessings, now begins an exposition of the sacred art of yoga. So what does your translation say, Deborah?
So mine, I have Swami Satchidananda, and his is a little more straightforward. It's translated into meaning, now the exposition of yoga is being made.
Yeah, so very brief.
I like the art.
The art of yoga. Yeah, it implies a creativity.
It does.
Yeah, it does. I like that.
And the participation of, you know, interpretation.
And a beauty to me. Mm.
Yes.
A beauty.
It does. It really does. basically what I'm seeing out of this too is that they're not just saying we're going to put forth this philosophy. You know, we're not going to just explain these concepts, but we're going to show. We're going to be shown how to actually practice this, how to put this into play in our lives.
Have it be useful.
Have it be useful, right? To actually make it functional.
Yeah.
I think that's very, very important.
I think, too, to live more meaningfully, more mindfulness in our everyday actions, being more aware.
And one of the most important things that I can say is that we get out of this practice what we put into it. Mm-hmm. So as much application as we put in, that's how much benefit we're going to reap.
So it's definitely important to show up.
It's definitely important to show up.
What would make you say that?
another translation that Iyengar gave, which I think is even more apropos, is the disciplines of integration are here expounded through experience and are given to humanity for the exploration and recognition of that hidden part of man which is beyond the awareness of the senses. So that's really deep.
The hidden part of man.
Part of man.
That is beyond the senses.
Mm-hmm. That's that center.
Well, that's what I wrote down from what you said first off.
What did you write?
You said, our deep center that is unaffected by change. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I've ever thought of it that way. I'm always in the mode of change, mm-hmm. you know, working on it, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
But never thinking that there truly is a core, which is what you just said again in Iyengar's way. That is unchanged, that we're absolutely born with, mm-hmm. that is in there, that everything swirls about it as mm-hmm. we go through our life. Mm-hmm. But it is.
That's right.
And that is what the journey is.
That's the goal of yoga, is to connect with that core, absolutely.
And I never heard it put that way. So thank you.
You're welcome. Absolutely. So, what is yoga?
Well, it's
to you. What is yoga to you?
For me, it's kind of what you're saying. It's a way for me to connect with my inner self, and to have that time where I work on seeing thoughts come up specifically, and working on calming them, you know, and seeing them kind of go past my eyes, but you know, mentally. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just slowing thoughts down by that meditation, in that movement meditation that you mentioned in class. So moving but still being aware of what's happening in my mind and making it my goal to really just let go of those thoughts. So I think I had written down something about my mental muscles. So yoga is a way to exercise my mental muscles. Yeah. Because to me, it really is a muscle, you know, that ability to
it's a good metaphor.
Yeah. You know, repetition, you know, in the way that you think is very similar to building a physical muscle.
That's right.
Because it's, you know, you get stronger. Yeah, as a, you know, when people say, you know, as a strong person, there's that inner strength mm-hmm. that I think is manifested through yoga for me in that mental muscle use.
Yeah.
So that's what it is for me.
Suzanne?
What does yoga mean to me? What is it for me? I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's a big question.
And I've never thought of it in that context, like, oh, I'm going to write an essay now as to what yoga means to me. I have to agree with your analogy. When I come into a yoga class, it's like, you know, breathe out all the the bad air, bring in the good air. But it's, you know, the anxiety, the negativity, the stress, the everything that has accumulated up to that moment.
Yeah.
And it's moments in time for me, over and above, and to try to connect the best I'm able to the inner strength. And some days it just happens, and some days, you know, it just isn't going to. But it keeps coming around and going, everything will be fine. Whatever the issues are, everything will be fine. The light is within, you know?
Yeah.
And
And
I truly visualize it. You're talking about using the mental muscle.
Yeah.
It truly is a visual meditation, if you will. You know,
it's interesting.
It's a way to be better at my life.
Great. Awesome.
Yoga for me, it's an essential daily activity. I wake up, that's the first thing I do, is get on my mat. Every day, no matter what, no matter how, and I've been tested lately too. I was wondering if it was going to be, you know, how well I was going to be able to go through with it as when I got sick or whatever, but still managed, you know, even if it was just a short little thing, because for me, it's what keeps me from, number one, burnout, teaching classes, and doing the personal training, doing everything that I do with
outgo,
a lot of outgo, right.
Right.
So it's a way for me to gather my energy and to harness my energy and to put myself in that center,
number one position.
That position where everything else can swirl around about me and I can stay anchored. It's my anchor. It is my anchor. And it also allows me time to check in with myself, to see where I'm at. The rest of the day, I'm working with where everybody else is at.
Outward focused.
Outward focused, yes. But in that moment, I'm able to sit and breathe, check in, check around to see what's going on, talk to myself, my higher self, and find out, you know, where I'm at and where I need to be and what I need to work on in that moment, perhaps. It gives me clues. The physical postures, if my balance postures are off, I know something's going on. And I know that I'm kind of losing my focus somehow. So I need to examine my life and see where that's at. And then when I sit in meditation, I can usually sit and open myself to my higher mind. And I ask, you know, show me what I need to know.
Have you seen a progression since you started doing daily?
Absolutely. I've seen a massive difference.
The daily?
Every single day. I've been doing since last October.
But a while.
I mean, there's people that have been doing it for 20 and 30 years. I mean, I'm no authority on any subject any means.
What it has done and how it has affected you.
I do, and it's been a profound transformation. Profound. I know things that would have thrown me into a downward spiral, you know, at an earlier time. Now I'm able to catch them before I even begin to go there.
Is it because of the awareness?
Yes, the awareness it brings, absolutely. The physical awareness brings emotional awareness, brings mental awareness, brings spiritual awareness. It all feeds off the other. And it can go the other way as well, you know. Being physically oblivious leads you to emotional, you know, obliviousness, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it goes both ways. So it's very much these spirals of motion. And like we were talking about before, you know, intelligent movement, you know, is the ability to take action. So, anyway, that's basically what yoga is to me. Okay, so the second, there we go with the ums. The second sutra is Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. And what that means, yoga in this sense is integration from the outermost layer to the innermost self. And when I say outermost layer to innermost self, that means from the skin to the muscles to the bones to the nerves, the mind, the intellect, the will, the consciousness, and the self.
Integration of what?
Integration of all those things together as one whole.
Say them again.
Okay, so integration from the outermost self to innermost, the outermost layer to the innermost self. So integration of skin, muscles, bones, nerves, mind, intellect, will, consciousness, and self. So that's being able to feel with your skin what's going on and to translate that into muscular movement so that they work well together, because your skin holds your sensory nerves, mm-hmm. your muscles hold your motor nerves, and they have to act, you know, one cannot act against the other. Right. When we're doing postures, for instance, if we are causing ourselves too much tension in the muscles, that's going to cause us to have reactions in our skin and vice versa. If we're holding too much tension in our skin, in our jaw, you know, in the back of our neck, for instance, that's going to create tension in the brainstem, and then the bones are also going to be affected. The ligaments are going to tighten up. The nerves are going to start spasming, you know. So everything has to work in unison. So we're looking for the integration of that function, the functionality of the entire being. Okay, does that make sense?
Totally holistic approach.
Right, exactly, exactly. And then, so that's yoga. Chitta is consciousness.
Okay.
All right. And consciousness is made up of three things. It's made up of the mind, which is manas, the intellect, which is buddhi, and the ego, which is ahankara. All right. And this is our vehicle of observation. It's attention, aims, and reason. Now, I know from my experience with mindfulness practices and mindfulness modalities that in their theories, they say in order to be mindful, you can only do one thing at a time, right? You can observe, you can describe, or you can participate. So you can only use one of those three aspects of consciousness. All right, you can use the mind, the intellect, or the ego at any given time. All right, but all three together, one is going to try to take the other one over.
Okay, so
and usually the ego is the one that wins.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, you're either when you're, I would say when you're, the ego is probably the participating one. it's the one that takes action,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say yeah, that so. the mind is the one that would be descriptive, describing things, and the intellect is always the observer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the seer. That's the one deep inside, right? So I thought that was really interesting. I kind of made that connection as I was writing these down. And the mindfulness, you know, that part of what I'd learned from mindfulness really just kind of clicked in with that really well. And vritti is a state of mind. It's also fluctuations in the mind. And the word vritti also implies like a whirlpool or a vortex. And what were you saying about that? You were saying that to you it was a negative.
Yeah, like you'd get sucked into that.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Sucked into...
To the vortex.
The vortex.
Of the
fluctuations of the mind.
The hurricane.
Oh. Yeah.
So you've got these thoughts going and you get wrapped up in them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Sucked in.
Yeah, because it's just so easy to start telling a story, you know, and like worst case scenario.
Yes.
And like,
you
what if
play out all, you know, 50 different ramifications of this.
Yeah.
And you totally lost.
Right.
And then,
yourself in it.
And it's always the worst case scenario.
It's always.
But we never go to the best place, do we?
Right.
Well, that'll lead to that winning ticket of
yeah.
the billions. If we never wind up there, no.
Yeah.
And Niruddha is restraint or cessation. Cessation. So basically,
cessation.
So basically, what yoga, citta vritti, nirodha means is yoga is the cessation of the movements in the consciousness. All right. So it's stilling the fluctuations of the mind.
I was just reading that, actually.
Yoga is stilling the fluctuations of the mind? Oh, nice. Yeah. And what it's implying is that yoga is the art of studying the behaviors of our consciousness. It's stilling the movements of consciousness leading toward the undisturbed state of silence that dwells in the seat of consciousness.
Hmm.
So that quiet center.
Yeah.
And that's a paraphrase of what Iyengar says in his book, Light on the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. So citta is a vehicle which takes the mind toward the soul, okay? It's citta, our consciousness, is the vehicle that takes the mind toward the soul. So we're going to get into that, but what do you think about that? What do you think about consciousness being our vehicle?
I would have to agree, but I don't know that I can agree that it's the 100% only. Vehicle.
The only pathway, you mean?
Yes. Because, you know, when you're in a meditation or when you're doing something and all of a sudden you'll have what can only somehow be described as an aha moment.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this the other day, right?
Yeah. You know, it's like, whatever it is, but it's like, huh. It's like, from one moment to the next, a light came on or recognition of something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that's necessarily conscious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe, you know, I'm a believer in the subconscious, and it has a life all its own. And, a lot goes on that we're not aware of, consciously aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe it's multi-leveled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't you think that it's all the same thing? It's all part of your consciousness? You just, like you said, it's subconscious?
Well, I guess it comes back to how are you going to describe consciousness?
Yeah.
What parameters are you going to put on it?
Yeah.
What description? You know,
yeah.
If you want to call consciousness all, you know, whatever layer or facet of it, well then, yes, because we're either conscious or we're dead.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, you know, but it's different levels of consciousness.
Right, right.
So, yeah. So I guess it comes back to how you, you know, describe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The description.
It's bringing a little more into semantics, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder if consciousness, if it was described more as mindfulness or awareness, would make more sense, mm-hmm. because you can have those subconscious thoughts without them being, you being aware of them, and therefore you can't real, well, you can act on them, I guess, without knowing that mm-hmm. that's where your motivation
right,
is.
Right, you're not, the words are eluding me, but you're not consciously acting on it.
Right.
You know, we're motivated by unconscious behavior mm-hmm. constantly.
Yeah, but some of those could be bad, right? Mm-hmm. Some of those could be unconscious,
yeah.
Negative, like maybe unconscious.
It's just reaction.
Jealousy or something, mm-hmm. you know, that you're not aware of, and then you
right.
you act in a certain way mm-hmm. because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's maybe not a positive thing, right?
Right?
So if we are becoming more aware of those subconscious things, then that's true consciousness or mindfulness or awareness, right?
Of what drives our behavior.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. But I think they're definitely
connected. that's what they mean by consciousness, is awareness. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the subconscious stuff is definitely part of that.
I think it's really powerful.
Yeah.
And worth knowing about, learning.
And becoming aware of.
Becoming aware of, exactly. Like what you were saying earlier about checking in. That's the checking in process.
That is the checking in process.
You know,
it's becoming aware of what's in that subconscious and
yes.
where those little hidden, you know, snares and traps and things.
Where the motivations for different things come from. I mean,
right.
you know, our actions are motivated by something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, to really understand what we're talking about when we say mind towards soul and the consciousness, you said something earlier that really tied into that well, and you said something about the light shining out. What did
yeah.
you say?
From my first learnings of yoga, of really
yeah.
getting, you know, it comes to me that our heart light, I don't know how else,
okay.
you know, but that's what I envision. I personally am not a religious person, and I don't know that I even believe that there's a soul, because to me that's more of a religious connotation,
mm-hmm.
because
uh-huh.
it has to go somewhere then or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I truly believe in a spirit,
mm-hmm.
and that light, we need to honor it. We need to find it, let it shine. It sounds, you know, trite, but as I told
not
you before, as I'm in Shavasana, I feel it, I feel the warmth, and I let it just go through, you know, out the top of your head, your fingertips, your toes,
mm-hmm.
to feel your whole body. And I always feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
That's really interesting, because that is one of the things that I'm going to be talking about here. In yoga, they have a physiology. When I talked about those layers of being, okay, I wasn't just talking about muscles and skin and nerves and all that. We have what are called koshas, okay, and these are layers of basically their bodies. Like, you know what a Russian nesting doll is? Okay. So these layers of our body, we have Anamaya kosha, which is the outer physical layer. Okay. And this is our body. Basically. We have Pranamaya kosha. And this is the next layer in. This is our energy body, right? This is the part of us that houses the breath.
Okay.
And the emotions as well.
Oh.
All right.
Energy.
And this is what I talk about in that meditation that I do as well. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one where I take everybody into the center. And then we have
Manomaya Kosha. And this is your mental body, okay? And this is the part of the mind that gathers information from the sensory perceptions, the taste, smell, sight, sound, touch.
Okay.
And processes information, thoughts, imagines things as worst case scenarios.
All those conversations.
Okay. Now, right here, this is usually as far as anybody gets right here. Because these three are all located in nature. Okay? These three are all of nature. Right.
Okay.
So everything from the natural world kind of bounces in and out, from here to here. Okay. Now within this, we have, and I'm sure I'm saying this wrong, Vijnana Maya Kosha. I think that's how you say it. And it's spelled V-I-J-N-A-N-A-M-A-Y-A. Vijnana Maya Kosha. This is our intellectual body. So we have mental body, but we have intellectual body. And the intellectual body is the body of intuition. It's where we know something, you know, like really as truth.
Okay.
All right. And this is our individual soul. And I know that word is hard for you, Suzanne. But
it's just the semantics.
For lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Okay, in English. So in English. So this is our individual soul. And then we have way down in here, we have Anandamaya Kosha, which is the cosmic oversoul, basically, I would say. You know, it's the being one with all. It's the cosmic soul. It's the one we become absorbed into, perhaps. But even within that is our Purusha. Okay, and that is the infinite. That's the infinite. That is the unmanifest, the void that is full, you know, is what Iyengar said. I thought that was beautiful, the void that is full. But these are our five, other than Purusha, these are our five bodies. Now, the problem here is, and this is where that light thing that comes from within that you're talking about comes into play. The problem here is that our reactions to the natural world and the pull of cravings and aversions and everyday life and whatever's going on tends to make this barrier right here between Manomaya and Vijnanamaya, between the mental and the intellectual. This is like a lens, okay? And so the light that the intellectual body is trying to shine out is obscured by all of the scratches and dents and impacts that are made on that lens, on the outside of that lens, by the mind. And so, yeah, does that make sense?
It does.
So we're not able to shine that light, that internal light, outward. And then what happens is, because this is all dark, we're trying to pull light from outside inward, and it's a false light.
Right, it'll never match up or measure up to that true internal light.
Because it would be finite. I mean, you could never have enough.
You could never have enough.
It's
right.
It's a poor
substitute.
Yeah.
Beautiful
right.
Point.
Yeah.
And we keep craving more, or being creating aversions to whatever.
Well, it's a perfect way to describe an addiction.
Thank you.
To anything.
Thank you.
An addiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It
because
is.
You
it
think
really
it's
is.
Feeding you.
Because
it's nourishing
that's it, right?
You.
I mean, whether it's food, whether it's
sex, whether it's drugs,
yeah.
rock and roll,
yeah,
whatever.
Another person.
Whatever it,
yeah.
is, there's never enough of it.
That's right. Money.
Right.
Everything.
Right.
Everything. Yeah. Life. Yeah. Everything. And
well
so
done, girl.
That's, so this is what
good
yeah
point.
This is what yeah. Yeah, well it's I mean it's I, this is I, it's not my point by any means,
but you're interpreting this
but I'm
and sharing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm interpreting and sharing it. So what yoga does is it helps us to polish that lens, the surface of that lens, so we can continue on through and continue on through and finally be able to connect with that center. Okay, that still deep place of silence within, you know, that is secure and safe and sound and unchanging.
So mm. I like the secure part.
Yeah, mm. yeah, it does. It gives us
yeah.
quite the security. And so why? What is it? What is it that's pulling us in these different directions? What do you think it is?
You mean the outward?
Yeah, the outward. Yeah. Why is it that we're so drawn to the outside world, to this reality? What is it?
I think there's a
us.
Disconnect, you know, there's a general disconnect of going inward. I don't know if it's, I think, you know, we had talked about this before, but the culture that we're in, you know, the American culture is very much about, you know, disconnecting from yourself and feeding yourself from the outside.
From the outside,
yeah.
consumerism
right.
to the nth degree.
I mean, it makes total sense based on, like, for a consumerist society to be that way.
Right.
I mean, it's the definition, right?
Exactly. That's what runs the engine that runs the economy.
Yeah, yeah. So we live in a consumerist country. So the U.S. philosophy is just the exact opposite of this.
Yeah, do not be aware. Do not be aware.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whatever you do,
don't be aware.
Even that idea of that we were talking about before the meeting of multitasking.
Oh yeah.
You know, breaks up that ability to focus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they demand that we multitask now. Yeah. We have cell phones, computers,
right.
you know, social media. We have this,
every
we have
job
that.
Application you look at, almost a second line in it. Must be very good at multitasking.
Really?
Yes.
You're kidding me.
Well, the jobs
that's
that
sad.
I'm going for. But it is. And it
it's
truly
so
is.
Sad,
and so
scary.
You have to impress them how good at multitasking you are when all the scientific literature is now pointing
yeah.
absolutely that no, it is not good. It is,
right.
It doesn't work. And
right.
You should stop it.
Yes.
And here's this, but we'll pay you more if you can do it. You know? Okay. Let's understand that.
Great.
Talk about disconnect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. right.
So basically that light that we're talking about that comes from the inside that we're trying to achieve, that mm-hmm. luminosity of being, that's one of the three what they call the gunas, okay? And these are properties of nature. All right. So luminosity is one, it's sattva. Another is rajas, which is dynamism or movement, volition.
Which you
I'm very rajasic, you're right, I am.
In a good way.
And then there's tamas, which is inertia, solidity, and mass. All right, so when creation became manifest, all of these three things were put into motion. When you have one thing, one is infinite, it's a point, it's potential, but it's just a point, it's there, right? It's an unmanifest origin.
The seed.
It's a seed, yes.
The seed.
Exactly, the seed. The seed. When you have two things, two and one point, okay? When you have two, you have duality, you have a polarity, you have opposites, division, separation, right? You have a line, all right? But you can only go from here to here and there and back, right? Mm-hmm. So that's as far as you can go with that, right? Then when you add three, you can actually take it somewhere else, or you can take it over here, right? Or you can take it over here, And three creates diversity. Right?
Yeah.
So that's vibration. It's motion. It's and that's your sattva, the vibration, the luminosity of light. Light is a vibration.
Yes.
Right. All right. And then you actually have a fourth. They don't mention this. This is something that kind of came to me. And I related this with Mahat, which is the cosmic consciousness.
Okay.
But I did this on my own. It's not part of the of Iyengar's text. And I'm not sure if this is right, but it's something that came to me.
We'll have to
you have
look
line,
it up.
Yeah. You have point, you have line, you have the plane that the three makes, the two-dimensional plane. But then when you add Mahat, you bring it into...
You think it's 3D?
It's 3D, exactly. You bring it into shape and form. You create reality.
Dimension.
Right. Exactly. So, then this came to me in my meditation this morning. It just kind of popped into my head.
Aha!
Aha! Right, right. It was more of a contemplation this morning.
Yeah.
I was training, and it was really weird because I was like downloading, like just kind of plugging in. It was really nice. But anyway, so.
Now step back a minute. Mm-hmm. What you're describing mm-hmm. with these three is, and now four is
nature. Is what our reality is made up of. Okay? And what that pull is that keeps pulling us back. Alright. So we're going for the sattvic quality. That's what we want. So that luminosity can shine out.
Uh-huh.
But because Rajas and Tamas are so strong, the forces of inertia and mass and the forces of dynamism and motion are so strong that they keep pulling us back and forth in these directions and don't allow us to come to that peace and tranquility and luminosity of sattva. Sattva is very hard to, it's almost impossible to describe as a concept. It really is.
Yeah.
Because it's something that, you know, that's what we're going for. It's our goal. It's like Purusha. It's like that soul.
When you say our goal, are you saying that it's a conscious choice or that it is naturally within us, or each of us?
Probably a little bit of both. I think it's naturally within everyone.
See, I would think so.
I do. Yeah, I do, because we're all beings of light.
Which is why so many people are so screwed up.
Exactly. But I think, unfortunately, many people have no idea that they have that choice.
Right.
They're just not even aware.
Right.
And so it is, that's one of the reasons that it's so important that we make it our choice and our mission to find that light in ourselves, because once we start bringing that out of ourselves, it begins to illuminate the entire world.
It's very Buddhist.
It is very Buddhist. It's also very yogic. How about that? It's probably very Christian and very Jain and very Sikh and very, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's very every religion. Unfortunately,
the best of every religion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, people in religions are so busy looking at the differences. And
they get caught up in
all the semantics and all the concepts and everything. The practices fall by the wayside. And that's what is so important about this, is the practice. That's the most important part, is that we actually not just discuss these things, but put them into play. So what I'm trying to say here with these gunas and with the mind, the different layers of being and everything bouncing off the mind, is everything outside of ourselves, everything external, is a reflection of our minds. And vice versa, our minds reflect everything outside of us. So, and it all plays off the other. The more crazy and deranged we get, the more crazy and deranged the world is, and our perception of the world is.
We see it through our are filters.
That's right.
I mean, all three of us could see the same thing, and each one of us would have a different experience or a different description of what it is,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
and a different thought on how it affected us,
mm-hmm.
and so forth and so on. So
that's right. Like, have you guys heard the story of the blind man and the elephant?
Oh, yeah.
No.
You haven't heard that one?
No.
It's real, yeah, it's a beautiful, it's a,
mm-hmm.
exactly the right description.
Mm-hmm.
There's like four blind men, and they're all standing around an elephant. And somebody asks them each to describe the elephant, and one of them reaches out and grabs the tail, and he's like, oh, it's like a brush. It's a brush. That's what it is. The elephant's like a brush. And the other one reaches out and grabs the trunk. He's like, no, it's like a hose. It's a hose, you know? And the other one reaches out and grabs his foot and feels the toenail. No, it's like a rock. It's like a, you know, it's like they each have a completely different description.
Right.
Based on what their sense of perception tells them. You know, and their point of perception.
Yeah.
You know? And it's completely different, but it's all the same thing. They're all describing the same object.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. You know?
And the perception becomes reality.
The perception becomes reality. And which brings me to another illustration that came to me in my contemplation this morning was one of the way that we react to things and the way our perceptions color our reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Say we meet a man, right, and he brings us flowers, and he treats us kindly, and he's really nice looking, and very intelligent, and, you know, we go out with him quite
good
a lot.
And
good sense of humor. I mean, just great, you know, we fall in love, and he's checked everything on the list. He's check, right? Wonderful person, absolutely
yeah.
wonderful person, and we're just like so just... Oh, and we talk about him, and he's just great. And then we go in the store, you know, a couple months later, and we look across the store, and he's hugging and kissing another woman. Oh, my, that, you know, and then he's just the most horrible, just
right.
two-timing, you know, and you can't say enough about how bad he is, right? And then you're talking about him to somebody, just going off. You're all in tears and everything. And somebody says, was that this and such a store? Oh, his half-sister works there. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Perception just changed again.
Your perception
yeah.
just changed again. You know?
That, yeah.
But then you've gone through all
true.
That turmoil,
yeah.
you know?
All that emotional
all,
energy.
Everything.
Just,
yeah.
And you've already, like, completely made up the whole story about he's running off and they're having kids and, you know?
Worst case scenario.
Yeah.
We didn't go to sister.
No.
You never thought it might be a sister, right?
We went to mistress.
That's right. And that's what we do. That's what we do. So that's what yoga gives us. The opportunity to sit back and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, let's breathe for a moment. Let's check our facts. You know, it's like with my hip yesterday.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've been having a few hip issues, right?
I want to talk to you about.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know all the facts. I don't know what's really going on completely. I just know I've got some pain. And I know I have a friend who just had a hip replacement. And she's about my age. And she's a yoga teacher, so, you know, I could just be projecting
yes.
all kinds of stuff
yeah.
into the future,
you're
you know.
Off onto that.
I could go off onto that, but I refuse to. I absolutely refuse
sure.
to, you know. I'm just doing the self-care that I need to do. I'm avoiding the hip openers for sure. and I'm waiting until I get the x-rays back and seeing what's really going on. You know, I'm not going to freak out over anything.
Yeah, because nothing you think of is going to change the outcome.
That's right.
Whether it's
See,
good or bad,
it.
Right?
That's so key.
Yeah.
What is it we learned long ago? That worry and anger are wasted emotions.
Yeah.
It will change nothing. And they always are detrimental to us.
yeah. Right, because then they can manifest as illness, too.
Yes. I mean, in everything, in negative, mm-hmm. you know, behavior and thoughts and so forth and so on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So.
That's where the strength comes in. That's that inner core, that inner strength. That's why it's so important to just keep going towards it.
Mm-hmm.
And keep going towards it. Because it isn't easy to get there. And it isn't easy to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't easy but it is so profoundly helpful. Isn't even a big enough word. Mm-hmm. It's powerfuler.
Powerfuler.
You
like
know,
that. That'll work.
It's so healthy.
It really is. It is very healthy. It's very healthy.
On every level.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And yeah, and it actually worry and anxiety can exacerbate.
Mm-hmm. It usually does. Whatever it is.
Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So much. It makes us more unhealthy. It feeds back into the physical as well.
Very much so.
As well. So, and in order to get to that core, in order to get to that center, we have to find the equilibrium. We have to still those fluctuations of the mind. That is the first key. That's why that's one of the first things he points out to, you know, Patanjali. Mm-hmm. It's, first of all, you've got to bring that under control. Got to set your foundation, which brings us to our asana section. Suzanne, you're on. Suzanne is our asana girl.
Goodness. Well, I don't have anything really profound to say, but. Zen and I were talking the other day as I was doing, she was doing training with me, and I was doing a standing pose, and balance on one side wasn't very good, trying to reach down and stay balanced and so forth, and then in my mind I remembered some teachings of yoga instructors in the past. Think about tightening the muscles around your, in this instance, your thigh bone, around your bone. Now, I didn't have to go into picturing the fibers of the muscle and the white of the bone and so forth, but just the conscious awareness of that task that needed to be done helped almost instantaneously. I was surprised, but it was like, ooh. So then I consciously really thought about it and finished doing the exercise. Was like, that was lovely. It was a wonderful, powerful, short feeling. It was just, and all it took was being aware, you know, that consciousness. And I, thinking about that, and Zanny asked me to talk about, she actually asked balance poses, but I took it into standing poses. And in order do a standing pose, one must balance. So
yeah,
so
have equilibrium, absolutely.
This is good. And standing poses, balance poses are essential in yoga. They build awareness of your muscles. They build strength, and they build stamina. And with all of these, that comes along is stability. And stability not only in our muscles and our standing and so forth, but it translates into an inner stability. When our bodies get stronger, it's like our minds get stronger in their way as well.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I really believe that there is a connection. And when we are strong and stable, we will feel more grounded and connected to the earth. And in doing that, we will feel more grounded and connected to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a thought.
Mm-hmm. I really like that. It's very important to find your sense of stability from your connection, from your roots, from the core. And the root in standing or balance poses, of course, is where you're, what you're standing on is your surface.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the soles of your feet. And rooting is the foundation of any posture, movement, and gravity. That's true. That's true. Absolutely. So that's why when I'm cueing balances, and even when I cue Tadasana, if you remember, I start at the feet. Plant your feet, you know, place your feet just so. Mm-hmm. You know, spread your toes. Feel the floor under, you know, feel the energy of the floor. Be conscious of that. Yeah. You know, and from there, draw upward, come up your legs, you know, pull your thighs in inward, you know, tuck the tailbone, center yourself. I always say, remember, when we go into like sides of a balance, I'm always center your gravity over your left, center your gravity over your right. So it's a process. It's really a process of just checking from point to point to point to point and making sure that we are firmly aligned. And then we can extend and expand out in whatever direction from there.
Right.
Yeah. But always start at your root. Yeah.
I got this from the Greater Baltimore Yoga site, which is fascinating. Really, really good.
What is their website address for everybody?
www.marylandyoga.com.
Great, thank you. Yeah.
And it says in the yogic paradigm, we attend to
paradigm.
The space.
Sorry.
I do know better.
Sorry.
But thank you. In the yogic paradigm, we attend to the space below the ground we stand on. We move a line of energy from our center through the center of our support limb through the corners or sides of our feet into the earth. We then can curve this rooting in a direction to move us in the opposite direction. And this is talking about the lift of what you were saying. Standing poses are provocations from the basic upright pose, from the mountain pose. Move from the center into the root and the lift. We challenge the legs to maintain rooting, the center to stay neutral, and the lift to stay light and lengthening. These are motor skills to help us out of dullness and overactivity that lead to pain and dysfunction.
Nice.
So yoga does many, many things for every part of our physical and mental, intellectual, emotional being.
Yeah, definitely.
It's true. It's very true. So extension and expansion always stay firmly rooted in one's center. They originate at the core of one's being. So that's Iyengar. When you extend and expand, you're not only stretching to, you're also stretching from. And I've been using that quite often in class lately. And it does make a difference. If you think about, if you reach your hand out and you try to reach your fingers towards something, you're not going to get as far as if you reach out from your shoulder. And then, I mean, feel how much farther you can stretch.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
That's why I like it.
It is so amazing, yeah. So when we think, what is the, I'm trying to find, he names it in here, that sketch by Da Vinci,
the man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The iconic man there.
Yeah.
That is like the perfect illustration for this.
Right.
Because he's reaching out in all directions, and you have this arc, this beautiful arc.
Right.
But even looking at the picture, you see that he's centered. It's not like he's leaning any which way. It's this is him.
Right.
And this.
Right. And that is a perfect illustration.
Yeah.
Of this. It is. Absolutely. So yeah. So again, equilibrium, and this. This is how we find our equilibrium is through, first of all, physical practice and sweat.
Sweat is good.
Sweat is good. I mean, it's that from tamas to rajas to sattva again. We have to get that solid, inert being of body off the bed.
Oh, to solid flesh.
Off the bed, right? And get it onto the mat, you know, and then get it moving. You know, and then eventually we begin to feel lighter and lighter and lighter. And that takes a little bit of sweat at the beginning.
Yeah.
It really does. But it pays off.
It does. It works.
It most certainly does work. So I think with that, we're going to wrap it up for this evening. And we're going to be talking more about the sutras, more about asana, and more about anything else that's pertaining to everyday life.
Yeah.
and how yoga can help to carry us through that. And if again, if anybody has any events they would like announced on our web, on our podcast, or on our website, please contact us at info@wayoftheyogi.com. And again, you can visit our website, www.wayoftheyogi.com, and we'll have a link to our podcast there, as well as our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look up my Facebook page as well. I'm Suzanne Harris, also known as Xanna, X-A-N-N-A. And I journal my daily practice there with my own insights. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Suzanne.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Yeah. And namaste. Good night.
Namaste.